Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One. Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumor Show. Hartley, good afternoon. How is your life going this week? Are you finding everything you need? Are you losing anything?
I can't say I am, but if I was, I would be able to find it from 50% further away right now.
And if you need to play a sound to hear it, it'll be 50% louder.
Yeah. And if you guys don't know what we're talking.
And in a different, oh, is it in a different key? I missed that. Yeah. I missed that.
Okay. Huge upgrade.
Okay. Huge upgrade. Of course, we're talking about the brand new AirTag 2, which was just released on Monday, I believe. Just kind of popped out of nowhere. I mean, we've been talking about it for years. When was the last one out? In 2020? 21?
One. Yeah.
21. Yeah. It's been a while. So, yeah, that's AirTag 2. It's 50% further with or farther precision finding, which is big. I mean, 50% is obviously, it's nothing to sneeze at, but that's a lot. You have upgraded Bluetooth. You have 50% louder speaker with a new chime, which I completely missed that. Mine just came in last night, so I'll have to test that out. And then, you know, there were some internal changes that no one will ever probably look at. It's harder to remove the speaker and all of that. So, I mean, it's a good upgrade, especially if yours are starting to maybe go down the tubes a little bit. I don't know. Have you just kind of replace the battery and move on. But if you need more, or if you're just like, hey, I lose things from a lot further away, this is a good time for you to go and get an upgrade. You can still get them for $29 a piece or a 4-pack for $99. How do you feel about the new AirTags?
It was nice to see. I don't think we were really expecting it right now. It's been one of those products that's been floating in the rumor cycle for quite a long time. So it was good to kind of finally get that out. But it is a smaller upgrade than I think we were expecting. It's been 5 years since the original, and this is a fairly small feature set. It is good because if you walk into an Apple store right now, you are going to get a distinctively better product. That should be just that little bit more useful. But this is not a dramatic upgrade. I certainly had higher hopes for it. But that isn't to say that this is majorly disappointing. It's just, it doesn't really feel like a second generation. It really just feels like an iteration on the first generation. There's no design changes. There's no change to the battery or for it to be rechargeable in any way. And although 50% further precision finding is useful, precision finding does not activate from that far away anyway. I don't know what the current range is. I assume it also depends on what obstructions are in the way. But you do have to basically be in the same environment to trigger precision finding. Like, it does have to be within your house. And it takes a little while to lock onto that. So 50% further away isn't going to change that hugely. It would have been nice if it could go a little further. But this will still be useful, especially in those situations where you might lose an item that's maybe in a place that is less heavily populated, out on the road somewhere, because with the upgraded Bluetooth, it should have slightly further range, which means it's more likely that an iPhone is going to come into contact with that and feed that information back through the Find My network. So it is just a little bit more useful, but this is not exactly a life-changing upgrade. I'm not going to go out and replace all of my AirTags right now.
Yeah, I think the only reason why I bought a 4-pack is because I don't know where all of my AirTags are, and they're all dead, so I can't find them.
I've done this once before as well, where I had an AirTag and I let the battery go dead. And then when I tried to go and find it, I could not find the AirTag, which felt really, really quite stupid.
Yeah. You know, they didn't think about that. There's got to be some way to like save its last location of where it could be in your house or something, or like, you know, at least give you an idea. But yeah, so I don't know. I think I know where one is at, or two. One's in my car and the other one is in my kids' book bags. Maybe. They might have ripped them out. Who knows? But yeah, so it was a good time for me to stock up on some new ones. What would an AirTag 3 look like for you then? Because this gives me, what this gives me? This gives me AirPods Max feel of like the upgrade. Although more.
Yeah. This is a bigger upgrade than the AirPods Max. So I think for me, it would have to be that we stop using these CR2032 batteries, these coin batteries. It feels pretty out of place with the rest of Apple's ethos, where Apple's trying to cut down on environmental waste, and it's done an incredible job at that, moving away from plastics, having a good system for recycling. So to just kind of send millions of these batteries to landfill every year feels a little bit weird and wrong. And also, it means that then you are having to go on Amazon and buy a pack of batteries like it's 2005. So I would really like to see it rechargeable, probably from the Apple Watch charger would make the most sense. It's kind of that shape. And I imagine that would be pretty simple. Plenty of people have an Apple Watch charger lying around. Obviously, longer range for both precision finding and to activate on the Find My network. But I think for me, the thing that I would most appreciate would actually be a different form factor. The thing that I am most inclined to
wallet,
lose...
Like a wallet style?
Yeah. So I lose my wallet constantly. Now, I do find it every time, but it will go missing for like 3 days in my house, and then I will find it like on the floor somewhere or in a pocket. And although there are a lot of very good third-party wallet trackers that are card-shaped, they do have a lot of limitations, namely that none of them support precision finding.
Yeah.
None of them at all. So the reason why I've never been encouraged to buy one is because I don't need to, in a lot of situations, know that the thing is in my house. I know it is. Mm-hmm. But the problem is specifically where. And a relatively quiet speaker that's been sandwiched in pretty tight and have those speaker grills covered by the card slot, I'm not going to hear that if that's in a pocket in my wardrobe somewhere. I really do need precision finding more than anything else. You can go, people sell on Etsy stripped down AirTags that they've kind of machined into a little 3D printed casing where it's a little bit closer to a card form factor. And actually the AirTag 2 is pretty significant for those sorts of people because the PCB is much thinner, which should enable those modifications to also be able to get that little bit thinner. But I shouldn't have to go on Etsy and spend $50 to get a modified 3D printed case for the AirTag circuitry. Apple really should sell a card because I'm not going to put a full-sized AirTag in my wallet. It won't fit. And I know you can get wallets that have a slot for it, but I don't want that. I just want a normal card-shaped tracker that I can just slide in without any problems.
I think there's a third-party card that you can get that you can stick an AirTag in, but you know the whole point of that
is I have one of those, but it's still too thick to actually go in a card holder. It would pretty much only go in like if your wallet takes cash, it will kind of fit in there. But this is not a serious solution. I think that it's time for AirTag to have a different form factor. I also would go as far as to say, really, a second or rather a third generation should probably have a loop for attaching it to a keychain. It does feel kind of ridiculous that I have to go and buy an accessory to do that. Although there are plenty of decent third-party ones on Amazon, I questioned a few months ago when I was buying, I think it was like a 3-pack of Belkin keychain holders for the AirTag. And I got those because they're decent quality and they're much smaller than Apple's one. But I received them and I thought, why am I buying this? Why do I have to buy this? This feels ridiculous. This is the main use case for this product. At the very least, it should have a little drilled hole that I can just put it straight on my keys.
Well, Apple also makes their own keychain accessories, so I'm guessing that's part of the plan. But I mean, there's still other things they could make. They could make loops now for it. They could sell more loops. You never know. Or I don't know. They can
plenty of accessories. I still think there are plenty of people that would want something more colorful or premium, like an iPhone case. And there are also plenty of people that want it like in the form of like a luggage tag that they can put around a handle, or they want to have an adhesive holder that they can stick to something. But just having a little machined hole on there is not going to change that. And we're at the point of having like lanyard holes on the AirPods Pro and even on iPhone cases. But the AirTag, the product where it makes the most sense to have some kind of hole, doesn't have it.
Yeah, I agree. That makes it makes a lot of sense. I'm also surprised, you know, yes, I would like a card version of this, but I'm also just surprised that the next version of the wallet itself doesn't have precision finding in it. It's one of the most frustrating pieces because I wouldn't mind a wallet like that, the one that Apple offers. It's just, it needs to hold like one more card for me, or at least make it slightly easier for them to come out. There needs to be a different mechanism, and then figure out a way to put precision finding on that. How does that not have it?
Well, it would require a battery, so it would be a lot more engineering.
Sure. But there's other companies that have batteries in wallets like that, because you can MagSafe charge them.
Absolutely. I mean, the MagSafe wallet's always been a little bit of a strange product because it comes from that initial wave of MagSafe accessories. And when MagSafe was first presented alongside the iPhone 12 back in 2020, Apple kind of showed off this whole ecosystem of, do you remember those weird leather cases that showed the time through, like the sleeves with the little window for the time?
Yeah.
And there were plenty of other accessories like the MagSafe battery that's no more. And really, the whole ecosystem of MagSafe has kind of shrunk to a fairly specific set of products. It's in the cases. It doesn't really need to be. People use it for wireless charging on stands, but very few people actually use the long-wired charger that Apple made much of upon its debut. And you see it on some other products like tripods, maybe. But the whole ecosystem hasn't really opened out as much as it could have. And I think Apple made the MagSafe wallet as a kind of proof of concept of what MagSafe could do, rather than as part of a desire to actually make a good wallet, because they want you to have Apple Pay and they want you to have your car key and your house key all in your Apple wallet digitally. They don't actually want you to have a physical wallet.
So I think if there was ever a physical wallet either.
even your driving license now in a lot of US states.
Yeah, but you can't do anything with that.
It's pretty useless as it stands today, and plenty of places don't accept it. And obviously, for me in the UK, that's just not going to happen. One way or another, you still have to carry cards around. And I imagine that the conversation inside Apple, if there was ever to be a conversation like, we should make a better MagSafe wallet with precision finding, with a battery that can hold one more card, I imagine it would come back with, well, why are we making a product that encourages people to not digitize their cards? We actually want to sort of subtly encourage people to do that. So why would we create a wallet that creates that inner conflict? I don't think Apple usually does that. I wouldn't go as far as say it cannibalizes the digital Apple wallet, but it certainly sort of seems to show a little bit of a conflict there. Which is a shame, but I think that's just one of those peculiarities about how Apple works culturally.
Yeah. Not to get too off topic, but you were talking about MagSafe products. One of the most frustrating things that I find about Apple's MagSafe products is the one that they don't sell that they absolutely should. Can we please get those stands that they use for the iPhones at the Apple Store? Like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, like those are so much nicer than some of the other ones out there, and they just don't sell them. I don't know. It always
there are a whole bunch of accessories like that that I think there would be a lot of use case for. And even when you think that we now have things like nightstand mode and standby on the iPhone, why is there not a first-party solution to that? I would really like that. But then, I don't know. Apple seems to, in a lot of instances, say, well, if we can't do it better, we'll leave this to third-party companies.
Yeah.
And there are some solutions from companies. Like, I have a Belkin charger on my desk, and it looks a lot like the one you get in an Apple store. Maybe it's not quite as premium, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to like take away from all of the hardworking, smaller third-party companies. Like Nomad makes incredible stuff. Belkin, as you said, we saw a lot of good things from Aki. Those were some of my favorite things at CES. A lot of their like innovative MagSafe solutions. But yeah, I mean, there's got to be a way to improve the AirTag a little bit more. But at the end of the day, I also understand that it is a tiny little coin-shaped thing. So unless you're going to do what you suggested, which is completely change form factors, there's kind of really not that much you can do. So I totally get it. It's just like, you know, you get a drop of a product and you're excited, and then you look at it more and you're like, oh, this is really not that great. And then everyone started thinking, oh, this is the time for, more products throughout the week. I just don't get your hopes up, guys. That's not happening this week, as you might already know.
Yeah, we were sitting with bated breath at Macrumors this week, watching Apple Newsroom.
Although I gotta say, MacBooks have to be coming soon, because the amount of emails I'm getting from accessory companies asking me to check out their new MacBook like accessories, and even one went as far as to say MacBooks are right around the corner, and I'm like, okay, I know you guys don't know too much, but they know a little bit. So yeah, just if you're in the market for a MacBook, just hold off. It'll be soon.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Also this week, though, we did get new product drop, but it was a software product. We've talked about it before, but now that it's officially available and I am no longer under embargo, I can probably answer a little bit more questions. I dropped a video on Apple Creator Studio. I've been using it since it got announced, but wasn't really allowed to fully talk about it. And really the thing that I use the most is Final Cut Pro. I use that every single day. So that was what most of the video was focused on, but I did try to answer some questions. And the biggest ones are, you know, if you already have one-time purchases of the apps, do you need to worry about like losing out on it, basically? And the answer is no. You're going to get updates. You even get some of the new features that were announced. The biggest thing right now that you're not going to get is the premium content libraries across most of these. And then with Keynote, Pages, and Numbers, you're going to get everything that you've ever used is still going to be there. It's just the AI features that are at the top, I believe they're kind of like highlighted in purple. And then the premium content library there for some of those templates. And the same applies to Logic. You'll get a lot of the features, but you won't get the hub of stuff that they're offering for free. And then moving forward, it will still get updates. I would imagine as the years go on, that's probably going to be less and less. Again, this is just my opinion. I do not know anything on that regard. I'm just guessing that Apple is going to want everybody to eventually switch over and find good reason to pay. And at some point, the updates are going to keep going, and the things that you're not going to get on the main versions, and maybe you don't need, but at some point you're going to find a feature that you're going to want, and you're going to be disappointed, and you're probably going to spend it. It's $12.99 a month or $129 a year. If you look at it against Adobe Creative Suite, that's incredible value, though you do get a bunch of things with Adobe. Do you need all of that? No. The same thing might apply here, but if you're a student, you have no excuse. It's $2.99 a month and $29 a year. That is like two visits at Chipotle these days. Like, dude, hop on that. Get yourself this. If you're even remotely interested in doing anything creative for a profession and you're in college or whatever, and you're still trying to figure all that out, mess around with it because it is such a good deal and so powerful for things that I use for my profession on a daily basis. You can get for $30 a year. That's pretty insane. Hartley, did you have any specific questions that you think I should run through, or have you had a chance to mess around with anything?
No, I haven't, but I wanted to ask you if any of the new tools stood out as uniquely useful, anything that was particularly impressive, because there's a lot of new AI features here.
Yeah, so my first few days using it, I was really annoyed because I'll just be honest, it was user error, but you're messing around. And then we got the reviewer's brief or whatever, and then that really helped. But when I first got access to it, I had no idea what to do. I just assumed the way I bring in my footage is fine enough for those features. The biggest features are the visual search and the transcript, and then like beat detection. Those are the three big AI features on the Mac version. And so trying to use the transcript, because like when I'm editing this podcast, you know, we often have little breaks that you guys don't hear about because I go and cut them out. I can remember the word that I said, and I can go and search for that word, and it will exactly find in the clip every time that word is said. And it not only like brings you to that clip, but it brings you to that specific section. And then I can either pull it out and put it on the timeline, which I don't want to do, but what I can do is find where it is in the timestamp and cut it out easy. That's great. Wasn't working for me for days. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? Turns out you actually need to do the correct way to import footage. You have to actually invoke it from the menu, because there's little options that happen then where it says transcribe in English, add to visual search. I guess that just doesn't happen. And if it does happen, it's not working for me. But if you just do what I normally do, which is drag and drop folders into Final Cut Pro directly without actually doing Command I and going into the import menu, it does not work. So if you're someone out there who's listening to this and you tried this and you're frustrated and you're like, this thing sucks, keep in mind, you have to go about this way, because then the moment I did it that way, all of my things were popping up in visual search and all of that. So that was really like frustrating, because now my whole workflow for how I import things has to change if I want to take advantage of those features. But I'm happy to report that they do work. The AI is still learning. Like I typed in building and it gave me things that like, I guess they're building adjacent. Like I'm in a building in this picture, but it's not necessarily what I meant by I want to, you know, find something with the building. But it did find also the clips of buildings, or I guess that's just too vague. You know, you can't type in iPhone. It's not going to give you an iPhone, but if you type in phone, it'll bring up all the clips. Like for me, I need to find specific things in my clips. So it'll be interesting to see as the time goes on, the more I use it, if it's actually going to be more useful for me. Beat detection is absolutely cool. It's too bad I don't really put music into our videos. And if I do, it's not the way that this really works. But what you do is you bring in the song. And if you are somebody, maybe you're making vlogs, like, man, 10 years ago, vloggers would have loved this, because just you bring in a song, you enable beat detection, the AI shows you basically every single line. There's green lines and some are darker and bigger than others. And the smaller lines that are very, you know, consistent and even, obviously those are the beats. So, you know, like I can make a cut and everything snaps to that line, which is amazing. So you pull a clip, you put it, you snap it to those lines, and you can easily make cuts to music better than ever. I used to have to like count 1, 2, 3, 4, like tap to the song and figure out where it is and then be very precise. You don't need to do that anymore. The darker, bigger green lines show you sections of the songs that change. So now not only can you make cuts to the music, you can make like make your video cuts to the music. You can also make cuts and change the songs itself without having to take it into Logic. So if you want to loop a section, you can do that easily by seeing, okay, this is how long that section is, Alt, Shift, whatever it is, the command, and just copy and drag it over. And now you've looped it. So if your song was just a little bit too long or too short, you can make those cuts and it's just so much faster. These are the things that I want to see AI be implemented into more. They're not replacing editors, they're just making it so much faster for us. And so that's where Apple is a little bit more mindful on some of these things.
I think where a lot of this now makes a little more sense than it did when Creator Studio was unveiled is the nature of these sorts of features. Because as you say, it doesn't change what you can actually do with your final edit. It's just adding a faster pathway to do certain things using AI. So existing users of Final Cut or Logic, whatever it may be in this family of apps, you're not losing anything. It's just a new feature that you will not be able to leverage. And pretty much all of these features sit inside that family. It's not like these are fundamental tools. They very much sit outside that and are quite additional.
Yeah, it's not like I'm generating a video, basically. I'm not asking it to make a review on the iPhone 17. I'm still doing all of the work. What it's doing for me, what it's doing for me is that it's making my life a little bit faster and easier by just being like, hey, you have 100 clips of phones. You need a very specific section. Why don't you go ahead and type in that keyword and we'll find it for you? Or you got to make some cuts to this music. Instead of figuring out, you know, how this song was produced, let's just make this a little bit easier for you. And there can be more implementations. I still use a third-party service for AI-enhancing audio because my building is metal and my roof is metal and this is a very big open space and the sound quality is terrible and you might notice it and you might not notice it. And if you don't notice it, that's because I use a lot of tools and features that take time to clean up the audio because I really haven't gotten around to soundproofing this place as much as I'd like. And it also just costs a lot of money to do so. So I have to find these tools that really help. And like, there are ones that can do, you know, like cuts to A-roll where you're, that's the next thing that Apple needs to add in because they're pretty behind and that's really helpful, is transcribing the whole video and then being able to make cuts via text as opposed to, you know, having to listen through it all because, and I'm guessing that's on the roadmap. It has to be. That is such a useful feature that they are very behind in. But fingers crossed, you know, I did ask Apple if this was going to be a way for them to start paying more attention to these apps and not update them once a year or twice a year, which is kind of their cadence right now. And hopefully being at a monthly subscription, you really can't charge a monthly subscription if you're just going to neglect the app for years on end. So I think that Apple knows that, hopefully, and will be paying more attention and adding in a ton of new features throughout the year.
And there are new features in Pages, Keynote, and Numbers as well, which stood out as slightly stranger because you can kind of understand with really professional apps why that might need to be supported by a different model financially to encourage more development. And these features, a lot of the ones you mentioned, are very are quite complex features that if you're not familiar with the exact workflow, you would probably never have thought that that would be something that was needed. But with something like Pages, I mean, you know, kids at high school make presentations in Keynote and use Pages to write up assignments. So that is a far more universal thing. And that still also has AI features that are now segmented off, but just not as many.
Yeah, and I mean, some of them are pretty useful, like being able to generate images for your presentations pretty easily, you know, the content hub. There's a lot more presets, basically, for your presentations that you can do. I would say the one thing that's really cool that's AI featured is that if you are maybe the type of person who in a meeting, you're typing up notes or whatever, and you do it kind of in an outline form, you can import that into Keynote, just the text, and it will generate an entire presentation based on your notes. So it'll section things off by the way you have it sectioned off, which is, you know, if you do it correctly and the AI reads it correctly, I've seen some examples. It seems to be, I mean, I don't do that for my job, but like that could be super helpful for a lot of people, especially a lot of students out there.
And it also can create presenter notes as well. And there's even like a cleanup tool, not like the cleanup tool in Photos, but it's if you have, you know, multiple images and text and animations all within one slide, you can clean that up and it will realign everything and reposition everything to just make it look that little bit better. I was also pleased to see super resolution from Pixelmator, which has always been a pretty good AI, or rather machine learning tool. It's been around for years. That is now across all of these apps. So even if you put an image in Pages, you can now click super resolution and it will basically upscale that image. Sometimes it can look a little weird and plasticky, but it is a pretty good feature. Sometimes it works very well.
If you're pulling those 280 by 280 like web preview thumbnails off of Google Images and you're, you know, late night getting ready for your class presentation. This is a good way to at least save you some time and headaches. But yeah, those are nice to see. And then obviously with Pixelmator, that is coming to the iPad, or it is on the iPad, which is nice.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
And that also has features like there's a new warp tool that is exclusive mm-hmm. to Creator Studio.
Optimized for touch and Apple Pencil 2 is really big.
Yes. The feature that I'm most intrigued by that I want to see some demos of is the magic fill for numbers. I don't understand what that is or how that works.
I'll admit I also did not touch numbers or really any of the I didn't have a chance to mess around too much with the keynote numbers and pages suite, just because I'll be honest, it's the least interesting of the bunch
But that's kind of why, that's why I'm intrigued by it, because it's the most useful. The feature that they're never going to lead with, oh, we put AI features in numbers, but that's actually where the thing that will end up being useful to the most people that manage their finances or various sort of anything you need a spreadsheet for. If you're in the Apple ecosystem, chances are you probably do use numbers, and it isn't as powerful as Excel. But maybe
do you though? I would love to see no pun intended. I would love to see the numbers on that though. How many people actually do use those three? I know so many people that have a Mac and still pay for Word and Outlook.
I think the majority of people do. And these apps have stagnated behind Microsoft for years now.
And even Google.
Pretty much, yeah. But I would be, I'm interested to see where Apple's looking at specific AI powered features, because that opens up things that may not be available in these competitors. And you know, we've had features in numbers and Excel where you can drag down and kind of continue a sequence of numbers nearly three decades at this point. So I want to understand what magic fill is. Why is that different to that feature? So that's my homework after this podcast.
For you music producers out there, something I once long aspired to be, there are some really good tools. Honestly, I feel like this update was more targeted for me. So I used to be, I went to school for audio production, whatever. I ultimately decided to pivot. And I did both video and audio, but I really wanted to do music, whatever. I still often make songs just for myself, just to mess around and do it at home, and I'll record. And, a lot of the things are I used to be in a band with friends. I'm in my 30s now. That's just not happening. So I need to make all the instruments myself. And that's where it gets really time consuming, and having kids and all that. It's just really hard to do. These new AI generated, they've always kind of had the ability to have these session players, but they're so much more they're just so much better now because of AI being powered into it, and you can regenerate different riffs and things. If you add in a session bass player after you just laid down the chords, it often used to be something kind of lame, and you can tailor it a little bit. Now there's way more stuff that you can do, and it's a much better update for people who are just kind of making music and demos alone. And then often too, that is, I'll make up a song and then I won't touch it for 6 months. And then I'll come back and listen to it and be like, I don't remember how to play this. I don't even remember what chords there are. And there's now chord identification, which is fantastic, because, or if you collaborate with somebody from long distance and they send you the song and they're expecting you to be a good musician and figure it out on your own, you don't have to. You can just see up what the chords are, and that makes it so much easier for you to figure out, okay, I know what key this is in. I know the chord structure. That's super helpful. And there's just a lot more to it. And a lot of this stuff comes to the iPad too, which we didn't even talk about. I really do need to jump on the iPad bandwagon for some of these things. But until I can make a project on Mac for Final Cut, bring it to the iPad, and then bring it back to the Mac, I think I just have to just abstain out of principle, because why can't you do that? Why can't we go back and forth? That's the whole point of this. right?
Yeah, especially with how much Apple has leaned into continuity and the power of even just the concept of continuity between devices. It is with those kind of pro workflows where that would be most useful for you to be able to pull something off your desktop machine and then throw it onto your iPad when you're traveling and just make some smaller changes and adjustments to that and then take it right back to the desktop.
And I believe you could do it with Logic in one of those ways. You can Final Cut, you can't. You cannot. I think you could do it one way, but you can't go back the other. So my guess is you can go, you can start one on the iPad and take it to the Mac, but you can't start it on the Mac, take it to the iPad, and then take it back. It cannot do round trip. I believe on Logic it can, and it definitely can on Pixelmator, which is nice because that just lives in the cloud, correct?
Yeah, and I think that's because right back at the beginning with GarageBand on the iPad, those are the same files. So this has been there from the beginning, but Final Cut projects are a lot more complicated. If you've got plugins, it's a much bigger piece of software and those files are a lot more complicated. But I do kind of think maybe Apple should have started with maybe porting over Final Cut for the Mac onto the iPad and then scaling it down rather than developing a completely separate iPad app that uses a different file.
Well, I think what, and I could be wrong, but I think where that goes is that Final Cut libraries on the Mac are so big that you will be running out of iPad space in a couple of days if you're doing any kind of real editing. Like, I have library project files that can be up to a terabyte in size at times. And it's just ridiculous. And I still don't understand fully how the libraries work and what the workflow is for that and what's the best way to limit that. Because I used to make one library for like each category of things that I edit, basically being like if I'm editing a personal video for my personal YouTube channel, that library holds all of that. If I was doing MacRumors work, it would be a MacRumors library and every MacRumors video I did is in all of that. That is not the way to go about doing it. That is what makes your library huge. So now what I do is I make a library for every single video that I edit. I make a project folder. I make my B-roll and everything in that project folder. And I make a library and I use that. And I never touch that library for anything that is not that specific video. And so that does scale down the size quite a bit because you're not harboring everything. But I just feel like they need to revamp that too. Because other companies are ahead. Blackmagic has cloud editing now. So like there are ways to do this and make it better. But I just think that it's been like this since day one, basically. So they would have to redo everything. And I just don't know that they want to do that. So I don't know. If you're, God, I wish we could get somebody who works on these apps. Maybe you're a former Apple employee and would love to, I would love to have you on the show. Like, please come on and talk to me about how, you know, if you worked on Final Cut, how this thing is made, I would love to get into that. I don't know if anybody else would care about that, but I would.
Sure.
Yeah. Hartley's like, I'm not doing that. You could do that show alone. lastly, just a couple things. You have external monitor support on the iPad for Final Cut. So now you can have like different windows put on monitors, which is huge. Also on the iPad, we knew about this from last year, I believe. At WWDC, I believe they announced that background rendering would be happening, but now it's officially available.
With the live activities too.
Yes. So now you get the background rendering and the live activities. You did not get that before. I mean, it was a thing that we knew about, but it just wasn't there. So anything else? I know Pixelmator, we should talk about that at some point, but I'm not super into all of that in terms of having like enough time to test it. I really just focused on a couple of other apps and wanted to get that done. But, you know, it's a great Photoshop alternative for sure. A lot of good AI tools in there. Just, it's a good app. I mean, we know why Apple bought it, but anything else that you wanted to touch on for these two things?
I think for me, it's just really a case of how this evolves and how it develops, because Apple has kind of neglected these pro apps for years. And I mean, as you've said, it would logically follow that they would get a little bit more attention going forward, but I don't know. So I think there's a lot of scope here.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Last thing. The design language of this suite and the rollout for this, the new app icons, has gotten quite a bit of attention. Is this the post-die like design that we're going to expect, or is this just kind of a weird random one-off?
I imagine this is a last over from Alan Dye. And I hope so, because I think that these app icons are terrible.
Yeah, well, you said it, not me. Yeah, they're not good. They're okay. They're okay. It doesn't
keep me up at night, but no. There have been plenty of these images on Twitter of all of Apple's like app icons developing over the years. And it looks like it should be happening in reverse. It looks like a designer that started very competent and becomes very incompetent, rather than vice versa. And that is a shame, but I think Apple is probably very aware of the backlash just to the icons and is maybe aware that that has not made Creator Studio look as good as it could have done. So I would fully expect at WWDC, we will get some refinements to Liquid Glass now. Alan Dye has passed on to Meta.
Gosh, I was going to say, you made it seem like he died. All right, well, that's our show. There's a train coming, so I'm ending this now. I'll give a better ending. Just give it a second.
I'm cool with that ending.
It's gone. The train's gone. Yeah, so, I mean, just real quick, I'm looking at the icons for Final Cut Pro, and my favorite, we can play this game. What's your favorite Final Cut Pro icon? It's obviously got to be 2002 to 2015. There were two separate ones. Those are the times that I was using it the most back in the day. So it has gotten progressively worse, though. Like, the original ones were really cool.
I feel like the difference with the latest suite of icons is that it's just tipped over the threshold of being oversimplified. Each time the design was pared down and simplified and flattened, but now it's actually gone too far in that direction. Way too far.
I think if you didn't know what that app was and you don't know what Final Cut is, and you were like, hey, what is Final Cut? Oh, I don't know. Well, here's the app icon. You should be able to tell based off of that. In the other ones, except for maybe the like 2025 when they redid it to what it was up until a few days ago, that one, like, you got to have the thing, have it open so you know what you're looking at. You know, it was the clacker for the cuts, you know, for movie sets. The actual name of that thing is escaping me. But like every single one of, the clapper board, every single one of them had the little part just enough open so you know what you're looking at. Like, and then like the 2002 one had the writing on it and it actually looked like a movie set version that you'd use. And then they went with these colors over the years. But like last year's, that one was closed. This year they reopened it, but then they made it purple and black and it's weird and you don't know what that is. It looks like a trash can. Like it just looks like the lid of a trash can's open.
Yeah, so main stage is a huge step back. Compressor is also really bad. I kind of get that something's being compressed, but it's very 2D. It's just so simplified that you actually lose the meaning of what it is trying to convey, which is the whole point of an app icon. So Liquid Glass needs some refinements this year. And it definitely has improved a lot. I mean, we've talked about this from its debut and the early betas to the release version, at least on iPhone. It got a huge amount better. Things got a lot more readable and just in general, a lot more sensible. But sometimes stuff like this happens and it's just, it's too much. It's just too much.
Yeah. I was going to say, the Final Cut one does not trigger Liquid Glass for me. The other ones kind of do. I kind of like Compressor, where it's just like, it's just squeezing like that. That was clever. main stage. I wouldn't.
But,
I would
but that's
never
only
know
because
what that
that's
is.
That's like you know that that's what that does. But if
well,
you've never
for
seen
all of
that
these
before,
apps.
If you're a brand new user, you're gonna have no idea what a lot of this stuff even conveys.
That's for all of these apps, and, honestly.
Yeah, and even stuff like Pages. I mean, Pages used to be a page, then it became a pen, and now it's just become two lines, which I guess kind of looks like a pen, but
it does
not.
It does
really.
Look like a pen. It looks like a pencil. Looks like a pencil now.
Yeah, but not
honestly.
Like,
I think
not visibly. Like it's just the outline of a pencil. It's not distinguishable in any way. I wouldn't know that that's a word processing app at all. Even Numbers, which is a bar chart, it kind of looks like a bar chart now, but it's sort of like the bar chart's less clear than it was before.
Motion's the worst one. I'm sorry. That's barely finished. You got lazy and didn't even finish the M. Like, what is that? Anyways, we're being way too hard, and I'm sure people like this, and we're going to get hate for it. And guess what? We have a new email address for you to send all of your hate to. It's podcast@macrumors.com. Please don't send hate. I mean, you can send constructive criticism. All of the hate can go to Hartley's personal email address. But otherwise, yes, reach out to us, podcast@macrumors.com. Please, by all means, send us whatever. We will try our best to absolutely respond to each and every one of you, assuming that you're being friendly. And we'll catch everybody in next week's episode.